taught me to take one day at a time and enjoy the things you got, man, because it may not be here tomorrow, man. Watching the buildings burn, all the people dying, you know, it was horrific, man. I was there, yo. I was right there. Yo, people, wake up. Wake up.
This is Rise Up Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, where the next generation of activists joins the Pacifica family. Rise Up Radio is a show by youth for youth about youth activism. You can hear us on 99.5 FM or streaming live on WBAI.org. You were just listening to 9/11 by Visionaries.
We've got a great show today. We'll be joined by a group of CUNY student and teacher activists, Hank Williams, Sydney Jordan Cooley, Javi Uyuvi, and Lydia. We'll talk about race, education, and the struggle for social justice in the City University of New York.
Yeah, we got a full house tonight, man. I mean, today in the afternoon. I see CUNY for All. I see the Coalition of Cultural Awareness, the Harlem Chapter of the Student Liberation Action Movement, some veterans of the CUNY struggle. Man, we got Josh, who ran a bookstore in 1969. We got Errol Maitland, who took that over in 1970. Today's going to be live, real live.
We'll also be speaking with Clive, a musician and Bed-Stuy resident who's organizing against police brutality in the wake of Timothy Stansbury's murder. And we'll give you the scoop on a special day of events on April 22nd at City College to remember and celebrate the 1969 City College student strike led by Black and Puerto Rican students that established open admissions and ethnic studies departments at every college in CUNY. Stay tuned. Coming up.
And now we're going to go into Stop the Police, once we can get that working. No, not that one?
Yeah, we actually had Clive, who's supposed to be coming in to talk about Timothy Stansbury to start with. Oh. We were going to start with that track because they wrote the song and dedicated it to Timothy Stansbury Jr., who was murdered in January. But they're stuck in traffic. So when they get here, we'll play that track and we'll and we'll speak with them. So we're going to play the Asada joint.
The Asada Shakur.
To kick off the CUNY.
A song for Asada by Common. It's a theme song for the Asada Shakur, Game of Morales. Student Community Center.
In the spirit of God, in the spirit of the ancestors, in the spirit of the Black Panthers, in the spirit of Asada Shakur, we make this movement towards freedom for all those who have been oppressed and all those in the struggle. Yeah, check it. There were lights and sirens, gunshots frying. Cover your eyes as I describe a scene so violent. Seemed like a bad dream. She laid in the blood puddle, blood bubbled in her chest. Cold air brushed against open flesh. No room to rest. Pain consumed these breaths. Shot twice with her hands up. Police questioned, but shot before she answered. One Panther lost his life, the other ran for his. Scandalous the police were as they kicked and beat her. Comprehension, she was beyond trying to hold on to life. She thought she lived with no arm, that's what it felt like. Got to the hospital, eyes held tight. They moved the room to room, she could tell by the light. Handcuffed tight to the bed, through her skin they bit. With guns to her head, every word she got hit. Who shot the trooper, they asked her. Put the mace in her eyes, threatened to blast her. Her mind raced till things got still. Opened her eyes, realized she's next to her best friend who got killed. She got chills if they told her that's what she would be next. Hurt mixed with anger, survival was a reflex. They lied and denied visits from a lawyer. But she was building as they tried to destroy her. If it wasn't for this German nurse, they would have served the worst. I read the sister's story, knew that it deserved a verse. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free, so dig it, y'all. Talkies crackling, I saying where they taking her. Though she kinda knew what made the ride peaceful was the trees and the sky was blue. Arrived to Middlesex prison about 6 in the morning. Uneasy as they pushed her to the second floor in a cell, one cot, no window.
face of hell. Put in the basement of a prison with all males and the smell of misery. Seedless toilets and centipedes. She exercised paint and began to read. 2 years in a hole, her soul grew weak. Away from people so long she forgot how to speak. She discovered freedom is a hunt.
A song for Sada by Common. Now we're going to go into the CUNY world.
It's a real struggle of equity and survival of people of color that has a long history, you know, as part of the civil rights and the human rights movement. You know, and now we're, you don't need educated workers anymore. That's the reason that you only have tuition. If you don't got the money, you can't go.
Come celebrate the 35th anniversary of the 1969 student strike at Harlem University, formerly known as City College.
These special events start at 12:30 with the ceremony at Remembrance Rock for open admission, followed by a discussion of what we've won and what we've lost at 6:30 p.m.
For more information, contact the Guillermo Morales Asada Shakur Community Center. Call 212-650-5008.
The Black and Puerto Rican student community fought against all odds and by any means necessary.
April 22nd at Harlem University. 212-650-5008. Ask about the aftercare.
Well, we're back to Rise Up Radio, WBAI 99.5, your Peace and Justice Radio. So we're here with these CUNY rebels, revolutionaries. Can you tell us who you guys are and what you guys are about and why am I up so early interviewing you guys?
Well, we came here to talk about this event that we're having on April 22nd to commemorate the 1969 student strike. The student strike in 69 was this really amazing, radical thing that these kids did, and it brought about a lot of change to CUNY. It actually completely, fundamentally changed the entire university, and that's why we're out here to talk about that today.
But more detail before we even get into that. What organizations do you guys belong to? And
Well, my name is Sid, and I'm from Hunter Slam, which is the Student Liberation Action Movement.
Yeah, introduce yourselves.
My name's Hank, and I'm down with SLAM at City College, as is Sid. She just had momentary brain failure.
I'm Lydia. I'm also with Harlem SLAM. My name is Lydia.
I'm Javi. I'm with Coalition of Cultural Awareness, founded at BMCC, but I'm currently going to at Brooklyn College.
I'm Yuvi, student at BMCC, and I'm down with COCA also.
I'm Josh. I was at the bookstore, and I say, get the publishers out of the book business and bring in the people.
That was the bookstore at City College.
All right. My name is Q, and I'm a member of SLAM CCNY student there, and I also represent 555 Door Radio, the Door Community Center, Broome Street.
Wow, we have a full house, and we're going to talk about a range of issues today and give you the details on a special day of events at City College on April 22nd. The 35th anniversary of the 1969 student strike.
And open admissions. Can you guys briefly tell listeners what open admissions is?
Sure, I can give a short wrap on that. Open admissions was the policy enacted after the student takeover in 1969. Basically, the agreement that was reached was that every high school graduate in New York City would have a place inside the CUNY system. However, one of the main components of that was establishing remedial courses at the four-year colleges, because what they did not want was a segregated situation where all the Black and Latino students were shuffled off to the community colleges, whereas the four-year colleges and the more elite programs were all white. It ended up working out a little bit different than that, but that's essentially what happened. Approximately 4 years ago, the Board of Trustees eliminated remedial classes at the four-year colleges. So while CUNY still says that they have open admissions, a key component of that has been severely damaged, and access to the higher-level programs is more difficult for students of color.
Let's take ourselves back to 1969. Before the strike, the university was virtually an all-white enclave, and now it is far different. Why were the students striking? What were their demands? And what happened? Hank, do you want to jump in?
Well, I have the demands right here in front of me.
Yeah, sure, let's start with that.
One of the things that they asked for was a separate school of Black and Puerto Rican studies, also a separate orientation program for Black and Puerto Rican students, a voice for Sikh students, and I can get into the Sikh program so people know what that is later, and that the racial composition of all entering classes reflect the Black and Puerto Rican population of New York City's high schools. And I don't seem to have the fifth demand here in front of me.
The fifth demand was that people going for a master's in education or for degrees in education would have to take Spanish language and Black and Puerto Rican studies as part of their major requirements.
All right. So those were the five demands. Can anyone discuss, like, if those demands were met?
Mm-hmm.
And if they were not, what was the agreement between the administration and the students and the community?
Well, the amazing thing is that the demands, for the most part, were completely implemented. That doesn't mean that the administration just rolled over and immediately did it. The students had to continue to fight to get their demands met. And it completely changed the way that CUNY looks. But ever since 1969, they've been trying to roll back the advances that the Black and Puerto Rican student community made. And that's why we have to come out and commemorate this. That's why we got to talk about it, because the demands that these kids were coming out with were good.
Now, those advancements, can you guys describe in greater detail, like, what those advancements meant to Harlem and to communities all over New York City? Like, it's obvious that CUNY became more integrated, but just to make a clearer picture for the audience, if anyone can do that.
Well, I mean, the results of this, I mean, is evident when you see, you know, people of color, you know, Black, Hispanic, Latino, whatever they want to call themselves, when you see them all through Wall Street and, you know, and, like, you know, in all these, like, you know, big corporations with some, you know, somewhere up in the corporate ladder, and when you see them in, like, neighborhoods like the Upper East Side, and you see them in, you know, certain neighborhoods in Queens and Brooklyn and other places in the Bronx and stuff. And it's like this, you know, people need to understand that people in the 60s and 70s are, you know, our ancestors, basically.
They're right here.
You know, they fought. Yeah, they're still around. Some are not. And, you know, they put their lives and their careers on the line so that, you know, us here sitting around in the studio so we can have an opportunity to get educated. And, you know, they saw that there was stuff missing. And that's what these five demands were there for, to, you know, put an education as relevant to the people of the poor communities in New York City.
That's right. And we have some of those elders in the studio with us. Elders, ancestors, whatever the term you prefer, or something else maybe. I wonder, Josh, if you might pipe in, and what would you say, you know, as we look back to the lessons of the past, as we plan for April 22nd to share history, what do you have to say?
Well, I remember that in those years, even I was astonished by the fact that City College was a white male fortress, mostly Jewish.
In the middle of Harlem.
I knew the African-American and Latino students, we all did, because they were frequently mistaken as members of the maintenance staff and so on. I remember Ernest Boynton, who became an award-winning journalist and so on. Unfortunately, I remember Colin Powell and so on. He was a bit different and extremely focused, to say the least, and in the military and so on. And I remember a very angry community around City College, a community that was very much and still is sort of like a third world country, a community that had so much crime that they even had to build a new police station on 126th Street and build lots of outdoor pools just to cool tempers down. I remember the era I remember eating lunch down in Manhattanville Park one day, and the kids were throwing stones at me, And I came over to the parents, and I'm the kind of guy who speaks from the heart. And I said, look, I don't appreciate the kids throwing stones at me. I'm not a racist, and I not only respect you, but I love you. And they said, well, I'm sorry, mister. They said, you may not be a racist, but we are racists. We have become racist by that citadel of white privilege you have up there on a hill called the City College of New York.
Mm-hmm. And that was in 1969?
In the 60s.
In the 60s?
65, 66.
And now Errol Maitland is also here. He's engineering for us today. Errol.
Yeah, but he was in high school, man.
Yeah, you came in. You came into it later. What was the atmosphere when you started going
to
the city?
I got to see it later. I got to see it in the late 70s. But before that, I went to Brooklyn College. And coming out of high school, one of the things you do is you start looking for colleges and universities to go to. I actually had a scholarship to go out of state. I wound up going to Brooklyn College. And I wound up going to Brooklyn College in the evening because I was working during the daytime. And getting into college in New York, you were basically locked out of the system. As Josh has explained, that City College was primarily a white Jewish institution. And part of the push that we made back then were that students on merit should be able to enter the City University system without having to, number one, pay. It was free at the time. If you wanted to go, you couldn't get in the front way. There was a back door, which is you would go in as a non-matriculated student. You would have basically all the rights and privilege of students, but you'd have to go and pay. And I think you gain a B average or a C average over a year, then you could enroll as a matriculated student and go for free. The push was make sure that the university was open to everyone coming out of high school who had a certain grade point average that they would be able to go to the senior college. Make sure that those people graduating from high school could get into college, so you had the junior college. Mm-hmm. And also for those people who weren't prepared because of the racism in the education system, that you would have programs such as SEEK to make sure that they're trained. And on the state level, you had the HEOP program, which makes sure that people could get the background and the training mm-hmm. to catch up on the work to go to school. It is interesting to note that City University of New York, when it first started by the Board of Education, had a motto basically that said something like, let everyone, sit at have a place at the table, knowing no distinction but industry. So as long as you had the ability to do the work, then you were supposed to be afforded the place at the table. And that did not happen in CUNY until 1969 when the demands were made and basically people took over the place and entered the
That's
university.
That's right. That's right. A lot of those opportunities are the legacy of the largely successful student strike in 1969. Although now in 2004, many of those things have since eroded. I wonder if we could talk now a little bit about things that have changed. Earlier, Hank was speaking on remedial studies and the decreasing availability of it. That was one of the original promises, if I'm not mistaken. Also, ethnic studies departments being disbanded. Who would like to take us forward now to 2004 and talk about what's changed?
Well, I can speak briefly on that, but maybe Javi or Yuvi can add a little bit more, but there are a few things. I mean, number one, ethnic studies departments were some of the hardest hit in the budget cuts in the mid-90s, which, we should remember. New York State had, had record surpluses. And at the same time, they were not only chopping down the university system, they were going after black studies and Latino studies. That's what they went after first. And I think that says a lot about the priorities of the people who were, the people who were setting the system. I'll give a very good example. I mean, I'm going into a PhD program at the CUNY Graduate Center. There is no African American studies department there. And this is at a university that has more black students than anyone else in the country. Whereas at Columbia and NYU, you have, you know, you have graduate black studies programs.
Right.
And, I mean, that is, you know, that's not acceptable. That's crazy. So, I mean, it is, so what's going on now, we have to realize that the connection is, it's not just what people did back then. The struggles are still continuing. I just got an email yesterday detailing some information on the distinguished professor category in the City University system, which is sort of the highest level that faculty can get to. And out of that, you're talking about less than 10% are people of color. Out of 110, there are two black professors, 4 Latino, and 3 Asian. Now, this is 35 years after open admissions, 20 years after the university has become majority people of color. So, you know, what you are talking about is essentially a university that is segregated. And I specifically use that word because you basically have black students and Latino students being pushed into the lower levels, and you don't have it proliferating through the entire university. It is also an issue of reparations and self-determination for the black and Latino community. You know, there was nothing magic about 40 acres and 2 mules. You know, that was simply just what you needed to provide for your family and provide for your community at that time. So now maybe what we should be talking about is a guarantee of a graduate degree and a good job for free.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Nice.
Well said.
You know, if I can just follow up on what Hank says, you know, for 125 years or so, CUNY was free. When they decided to implement tuition in CUNY, it actually cost more to collect the tuition than it was for not having it. So the tuition wasn't an economic thing. It was a political decision to cut back on the number of young people of color, black and Puerto Ricans and other Latinos and Asian and other people who were taking advantage of the education in CUNY. And when we talk about the creation of ethnic studies department in city, we should not just limit it to blacks and Latinos. What happens is right now there is an Institute for Italian Studies in CUNY, and you will see it posted as one of the institute in the Graduate Center, and that came about because of the demands. The Jewish Studies program came about because of the demand, okay, that people and cultures were not being represented or studied or given the place that they deserved in the university. So it just wasn't about a black thing. It wasn't more inclusive things. Other people picked up on the struggle and carried forward and met their demand in all those departments, of course, for the most part, have been knocked out.
And ironically, all those ethnic studies of Italians and the Jewish people, they're all being cut, too, right along with, like, our ethnic studies. I just want to go back to, like, strategies for a second, because there's a major, major drift in the way CUNY activists of today deal with problems as to when CUNY activists of yesterday. A lot of people like to argue that the main difference between then and now is that in 1969 it was a lot more support for radical actions like building takeovers and other actions that even entailed violence. A lot of old school people don't even tell the new school people. But like, how far does that argument hold true? And anyone can jump in here. Like, how long can we keep saying that it's because they had support? And I asked this question. I was talking to Esperanza like 2 weeks ago. She was one of the 6 Puerto Rican students in night school in City College in 1968. And like, they had these incredible odds. It was 6 of them. Ron McGuire was telling me a story like how 30 black students like fought off 200 white supremacist students.
That's his favorite story.
You know, and like, these were incredible odds, you know, and I just want to know what's up. What's the difference? I was born in 76 when they implemented tuition.
We were in a period of coming out of the World War II and the fight that began there for civil rights in this country into the periods of the 50s and the 60s when, yes, there was a more militant movement. You had a person like Malcolm X on the scene. You had the King movement taking place. And you had a movement for liberation taking place all over the world. So within that context, you had the situation taking place in the high schools and on the college level and all levels in New York. Remember, the fight for community control was taking place and self-determination coming, you know, out of Brown versus Board of Education in the 50s. That was all the continuum that you saw. So today, it's not right to ask young people to go out and fight in a vacuum. And it was a community struggle. It just wasn't college student fighting. You know, City College is situated within the Harlem community, and it was the Harlem community that sent its young people up to the college to do what they did, and there was a community that supported them, from the religious leaders, from the politicians, and the like. So I'm not going to ask you guys to go out there and do some kamikaze action and get picked off or, you know, be forgotten in some jail cells, but for it to be a community effort, and you got to build and rally communities. When they put up the fence at City College, the symbolic thing that it did on the Yolanda Moses was to drive a separation and to cement that separation between the college and the Harlem community, and that's something that needs to continue to be resisted, and that's why the Shakur Morales room is so significant, because it is the only free, liberated space where the community had a direct link to the college, where community folks can walk in without being questioned as being outsiders in their own community.
That's right. You're listening
and,
to...
And this oppressive $22 million security force is a manifestation of their fear of the people and of the community rising up again. And we have to eliminate that $22 million security force. In the 60s, I think there were like 6 to 8 old men on the entire City College campus. They were between watchmen and friends. And of course, we had a lot of veterans of all sorts around, Korean veterans. We still had World War II veterans. And I remember 6 chaps dispatching a mugger on Morningside Drive, Bruce Lee style. Well, we have to bring back this militant spirit among the people and show them what struggle and social justice is about.
That's right. You're listening to Rise Up Radio. It's getting warmer, 53 degrees. It's 11:31. And we're talking about CUNY, about the struggle to preserve educational opportunity, about educational justice in many ways. We're joined by a whole room full of guests, activists, students, teachers, parents, all passionate about CUNY. I wonder now if, I know you have your hands full, Javi,
yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, you're a student at the Borough of Manhattan, you're a student at Brooklyn College. You did go to the Borough of Manhattan Community College, and you're an activist with CUNY for All, co-founder of the Coalition of Cultural Awareness, a.k.a. the Coalition of CUNY Activists. Now you find yourself on the campus of Brooklyn College trying to raise awareness on a campus where there's less activism, less awareness of the history we've been speaking of today. I just wonder if you could speak a little bit about how you're trying to organize. We're talking about strategy and tactics and ways to engage people. You could speak on that.
Yeah, you know, at Brooklyn College, it seems it's pretty like far away from the rest of the campuses. It's all, you know, the last stop on the 2 train, Flatbush Ave, and it's like the community there, the community where it is in the neighborhood is definitely not represented in the school in any fair way. You know, the majority of the students, though they are from Brooklyn, they're mainly Jewish and Italian Americans. And, you know, there is a large population of international students from, like, you know, East Asia and stuff, and there are students from the, you know, from the Caribbean and stuff, but it doesn't represent the community. And I think that's a problem throughout all CUNY campuses, except when you talk about the community colleges, which are extremely underfunded, and they just don't really have the resources that are needed. But at that campus at Brooklyn College, students don't really seem to know about, you know, the history of CUNY, what's really going on in CUNY, what are the real issues, you know? like, I find myself a lot of times struggling just on international issues and stuff that's going on in the world, where, you know, people just don't, like, they talked about, like, in the 60s and 70s, there was liberation movements throughout the world. And I think a lot of people in our communities realized this, that there were freedom movements. Whereas now, it seems like any people trying to get free from oppression are terrorists, or they're just crazy because they don't want freedom. Meanwhile, you know, how can freedom ever be given under martial law, like we're doing in Iraq, mm-hmm. and how Israel's doing in Palestine? And this is why, this is the main issue at Brooklyn, you know, the Israeli and Palestine conflict. And, you know, people just don't seem to connect how, you know, there's segregation going on in the other world implemented by, you know, governments like ours in America or supported by our governments. And that is not just going on in other places. It's going on right here in America. That's, I mean, right. You know, schools are more segregated now, or as much so as it was before Brown versus Ed, mm-hmm. Brown versus Board of Ed, you know? And people just, they don't, you know, they don't really know this. They don't realize this, that, you know, stuff hasn't really, you know, progressed. Mm-hmm. There isn't that much progress, and there needs to be.
And that connection between the climate here in the country and the climate on the campuses of CUNY. You know, earlier this week, presidential candidate John Kerry visited the campus of City College and staged this little event before jetting downtown and collecting millions of dollars worth in donations. I'm wondering if we could talk just briefly about the connection we see in some cases. Javi, you were telling me last night, you know, trying to organize on the campus of BMCC, the hostility, the kind of the militarization of the campus in certain ways. If anybody wanted to speak on that issue, that would
be
great.
I can actually speak on that issue. There's a lot of problems because in the BMCC campus, because what's going on is that the administration sees that students are being aware of the situation that surrounds them. So now what they're doing is that, and it's funny because these things are not on the bylaws, so it's not written in stone, they just implemented it. So what they do is now, when you want to have an event, they have the peace officers come in, and you have to pay them for their services.
And you have to pay insurance.
Exactly, and you have to pay them just in case they arrest someone. I mean,
God forbid you have a hip-hop event, and then you got to pay all kinds of money.
Exactly.
Metal detectors.
So it's just really ridiculous. And, I mean, it's just all this bureaucracy. You know, you have to go through all these procedures, and I feel that it's so you can't have the event. You know, it's like, it's too much. Minutes, they want to be all in your activity.
It's because you lose your momentum when you're doing all of this.
Exactly.
You got to file everything in triplicate, and you lose your momentum to have really powerful events.
Talking about events, sorry, but we got to start wrapping this up. Next segment's coming up. Just talk about April 22nd. What's happening? That's an event you guys are doing. What's up? They're fighting to talk.
Basically, there's going to be an entire day of activity up at City College, starting at 12:30 to 1:30. There will be a ceremony commemorating the 35th anniversary at Remembrance Rock. After that, there will be, you know, up in the Asada Shakur Guillermo Morales Community Center, we'll have lunch and we'll have a discussion for the people that want to come back there and do that. And, you know, starting at 6:30, we'll be kicking off an evening event where we're going to have some folks back from, you know, who were part of the takeover, back to talk, and a short clip of a film that was done about that. So a lot of interesting stuff for people that want to come. Hopefully everybody can come up there. You can click on to WBAI's website at WBAI.org, the community events page, it's up there. Or you can holler back at us at 650-5008. That's the number for the Morales Center. It's 212-650-5008.
Or you could check out www.cunyunderground.org.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I've been looking that up. Name's Q, anyway. You can also take the C train all the way to 135. You can be getting off with the 109 on 135 also. So, yeah, just come for the event.
Come through, man.
Events.
Come through. If you love your community and if you love an education, And if you respect the elders, man, you got to come through to this.
Put it this way. We're taking over Harlem University that day.
Right.
From 12 to 9 p.m.
Education is for everyone.
I just wanted to add, it's important for everyone to come through to this event because CUNY's in danger right now.
He's always in danger.